Wait a minute, this sounds like rock and or roll.
Hello, you're listening to Rock and or Roll. I'm BJ, back home from the Nashville Rockin' Pod Expo 2018. Had a great weekend last weekend. Drove down, stopped at a couple record stores in St. Louis, hit Nashville, stayed in an Airbnb with Greg Renoff, John Lamro, and Eric Miller. Had a lot of fun. Went record shopping in Nashville on Friday. Went to dinner with Ken Mills and his posse on Friday night. Saturday, the Nashville Rock and Pod Expo at the Nashville Palace. I think the event was a huge success. The feeling was electric in the building. I think everybody thought it was a great time and a great success. Chris Sinzak did an amazing job putting the event together. All of the special guests shuttling between podcasts, doing interviews, all of the other podcasters appearing on each other's podcasts. The communal environment and just the spirit of being a music fan and sharing in that love of rock and roll. We need more love for rock and roll in the United States these days, so that's what this event was all about. And I got to interview Troy Laketta, the drummer from Tesla, one of my favorite bands ever. I got to interview Paul Taylor from Winger. I had a great conversation with Joe X Doobie and Brendan Harkin from the legendary hard rock band from the 70s, Stars. And I also had a very interesting conversation with young guys Ben and Dakota Denman, brothers in their mid-20s who have a heavy metal band that's just as good as any other heavy metal band from any other era that you're going to find. What they're doing it so well. But as you'll hear in the conversation I had with them at the end of this episode, they're very frustrated. They just don't know how to get what they do in front of the right people. They need record label support. They need tour support. They need to get on a big tour as an opening act. They need some kind of exposure. And they just don't know how to make that happen. But the Nashville Rock and Pod Expo 2018 was a great success. And Chris Sinzak has already announced the planning stages for Round 3 next year in Nashville for the Nashville Rock and Pod Expo Volume 3 2019. So I had such a fun time there. It was great to meet everyone and hang out with all my old friends now. Lee McCormick, Eric Miller, Craig Smith, John Lamro. It was great to meet Brad Page, who has started up a new podcast called I'm In Love With That Song. It was so great to meet Wally and Rich, who you will hear at the end of this episode. They didn't make it last year, but they made it down this year. We really missed Brian Sword and Joe Royland, who couldn't make it this year, but hopefully we'll get to see you guys next year. It was great to see people again like Joey Haney and Henning Mielke, and of course, the Podfather Ken Mills. I was lucky enough to get to play Shock Me on stage with Gary Schaller and Ken Mills of the Pod Kissed. Gary rocked it on the solo, and we also had the amazing rhythm section of Jody Havnott and Lee McCormick. So just a big thank you to everyone that came to the event, podcasters and spectators and record shoppers. We had a great record show again. I bought some cool heavy metal records from one of the vendors. But what this episode is going to be all about is the interviews that I conducted at the Nashville Rock and Pod Expo. And let's kick things off with Troy Laketta, drummer from Tesla.
Cool. Now, what am I looking at here?
Yeah, that's my podcast, Rock and or Roll. This got all cool. My information on there. Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Actually, you guys were the first show I ever saw on the Great Raider Controversy Tour with Great White and Badlands. first concert. My friend's dad took us.
Really?
Yeah. Great Radio Controversy. It came out on my 15th birthday, and I remember going to get it. Love that album so much.
Thank you. You know, it kind of brings up a time I think of Ray Gillen, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and he was such a sweetheart with Badlands, and they were such a great band, and obviously Eric Singer, you know, moved on and done real well for himself. But, you know, I appreciate that. Yeah, you know, to think back of all the years that we've been doing this and think about how people have been affected, you know.
Yeah.
All of us through different stories and scenarios, you know. But just grateful, man.
Yeah.
You know, that we're still doing it.
Yeah. Well, Tesla, you know, that whole... I liked all that, what they call hair metal and everything then.
Me too.
I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
But Tesla kind of got lumped into that, even though you were so much more, just such a classic rock band.
Yeah.
You could have been from the 70s. You know, you could have made your records in the 70s. They would have sounded fresh then, probably, you know.
I agree. I mean, you know, we didn't set out to do anything other than what we were doing. We were just writing songs and playing.
Yeah.
You know, I like Nikki Sixx's comment, you know, Tesla, they're a bunch of tomato farmers in Sacramento or something, you know, and it was really perfect because there's a lot of truth in that, but we're just a bunch of guys that love music and write, and it wasn't about, you know, what we were not doing, we were just doing what we were doing.
Yeah.
I loved all those bands, you know, we got a tour with all of them, from Motley Crue to Poison to Leopard to... You know, a lot of great tours we were on back in the day. David Lee Roth, you know, Alice Cooper.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
I thought Mechanical Resonance was a really good album, but Great Radio Controversy just blew my mind when it came out because I loved it so much. And, you know, they always talk about, like, the sophomore slump where a band, you know, that their second record, they didn't have as much time to write the songs and that kind of thing. But you had the songs, and the songwriting was so great. Like, what did you write those songs on tour and stuff, or where did you guys find the time to get all that done?
I think what happened was, I mean, my memory's horrible, but we probably came off the tour after being on the road, and we probably went in to write the record, and we probably just wrote the record, and like we do, and just doing our thing, auditioning songs, and the producers were involved, and they didn't even want Love Song on the record. Nobody did, which was fine, but we did, and it worked, and it was who we were, and, you know, people want to take a song like that and go, well, there's three good parts to it, but there's no chorus, you know, it's like, well, I mean, we weren't writing in formula, we were just writing, you know. So it did happen, and then for me, Psychotic Supper was probably one of my favorite records.
It's
after,
great record.
You know.
Yeah.
So, and now we've got a new record coming out in January that Phil Collin produced from Def Leppard.
Wow, cool!
And it's a phenomenal record.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Love Song is a brilliant song, but the Paradise to me, it's one of the greatest songs ever.
Thanks, man.
Do you remember writing that song? Do you remember
Brian, our bass player, wrote it.
Yeah,
Brian Wheat wrote it. Yeah, and he was such a Paul McCartney fan that, you know, the arrangement on that and the way it turned into that was just basically not being pigeonholed into one way of doing things. Back in the 70s, people had amazing arrangements and things that were happening. And so just a byproduct of what we were listening to.
Is it exciting when you're part of creating a song like that? Like, do you realize that you have something really special there?
You know, I think we realized... I realized when I saw the band, the only thing that was missing from that band was me, and I knew we were going to do what we did. There was no doubt in my mind.
Yeah.
And I knew it was special.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really believed that. I mean, I had a... feeling in my gut, man. I knew we were gonna do that.
Yeah.
Exactly what we did.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that from a cocky. I just believed it was something inside of me, man. I just knew that. Oh, we're gonna do this, and that's what we're gonna do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. Just.
Well, I mean, people who don't play music or don't play bands don't realize how difficult it is to play in a band and how good you have to be. And so when it all comes together like that, and you know that, like, you're all really in sync, yeah, it must really feel like magical in a way.
It is, yeah. Today more than ever, 32 years later, yeah, whatever it is, looking back, the legacy, what we're doing today, we're still very, we're still reinventing ourselves, you know, and the music and the time. And on a personal note, everybody is. So we're just constant in growth mode, and evolution, you know, is happening. And the byproduct with the new record with Phil is something that we wouldn't have probably been good for us earlier on, because there was so much of Phil injected into it. It's his record producing, but it's us, and it's real, and it's genuine. But we really did make the record he wanted to make. And with all his experience with Mutt Lange and the Def Leppard records, we were blessed with the timing, you know, to come together for all of us, for him to be that fifth Beatle. Because the new record, it's really awesome.
Awesome. I can't wait.
I'm excited about it. It's powerful.
One thing I wanted to ask you, I don't know if this is a dumb question, but I had always noticed that you got Love Song and Paradise back to back on the second side of Great Radio Controversy, and then Psychotic Supper comes out, and What You Give and Stir It Up were like in the same exact spot in the album, the two ballads. Was that on purpose?
No.
No? It just happened that way?
I guess so.
Yeah. Did you ever think about that? Because I always noticed that. I was like, well, I wonder if they did that on purpose. Because I Love Song Paradise right in a row is so great. And then you get What You Give and Stir It Up right in a row, too. I thought it was interesting.
You know, I mean, I'm sure it was a conscious effort while we were placing songs and how we felt the flow of the record was going. But it wasn't like, oh, we did this and now we're... No, it wasn't a conscious effort relating to the record.
That's interesting. I just always noticed that. And then that's one thing is a lot of, you know, ballads were a big thing in the 80s with bands like trying to have hit songs, but the Tesla ballads just, you know, were so above and beyond all the other songs like that. And I guess it's because you weren't like trying to do a ballad to have a hit, you were just writing a good song, right?
Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, we weren't ever, nothing pretentious about us at all, ever, ever, to this day.
Yeah.
The only thing I would say that's pretentious, I want to back up a little bit on to this day because of what we did with Phil. We did, it was a conscious effort of the record that we were making.
Yeah.
So we really did a lot of listening and took a lot of direction, which we never did in the past.
Yeah.
We were doing what we wanted to do, how we wanted to do it. It didn't matter who you were. We were in it. Our producers that were involved had a power struggle with us. But Steve Thompson and Michael Barbieri did do a lot of nice things with us. I give a lot of credit to them for sure. But we were always pushing forward, doing our thing, you know. So.
Well, so the new record's in January. Do you have a name for it yet? Or do you have a name for the new record yet?
Yeah, I believe it's called Shock. Okay. Shock.
Awesome.
Shock.
Awesome, I'll be waiting for it.
How's it going?
Hi. All right, so I'm with Paul Taylor from Winger. I saw you guys open for Kiss at Alpine Valley.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if you remember this, but Kip Winger tripped and fell on his face on stage at that show.
I don't remember, but there's probably been a few incidences of that for all of us.
Yeah.
Sliding across the stage and sliding right off the end and into the audience. And, you know, one time swinging a guitar and it slipped out of his hand and went flying into the, you know, it happens.
I bought one of those full print shirts at that show, I remember. You had a Winger shirt that was like printed all over the whole shirt.
Oh, wow.
But my show Cheap Talk, it's a Cheap Trick podcast.
Yeah.
And so I was thinking, I would ask all you guys, you know, from the music industry, maybe you've come across Cheap Trick, interacted with them, maybe you just have a Cheap
Trick related
story.
Well, funny enough, one of my very first tours was opening for Cheap Trick, which was back when I was with Aldo Nova in 82.
Yeah, right.
And
awesome.
We went out on the road. It was us and Saxon and Cheap Trick.
Wow.
It was a lot of fun. I mean, of course, I was flipping out because I was a huge Cheap Trick fan. So
well, yeah. See, that's the theme. All you guys, your generation, musicians, guys and bands, you all love Cheap Trick.
I think everybody does. They're just one of those bands. There's certain bands that just kind of have the respect of everybody else.
And yeah.
Cheap Trick's just, you know, aside from the fact that they've survived the test of time and he's still singing so well, and they're just amazing, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But
So when you were on tour with them, do you have any memories or stories?
Well, I had a couple of memories. We did there was another tour where we did, it was with Saxon and Cheap Trick and us, and Saxon's drummer got very ill, and Bunny was going to sit in and play drums for Saxon, but as the next day came and the show, he didn't have to, but we were all going early just because we were like, oh, we got to see this.
That would have been awesome.
But, and then I remember one time, it was funny, we were in Corpus Christi, Texas, and we were all by the pool, and some girl, Robin was down there, and most of the Cheap Trick band, and me, and I think the guitar player of Aldo were down there, and some girl was up on probably like the 10th floor balcony and spotted those guys. She's like, oh my God, are you guys Cheap Trick? She's yelling off the balcony to the whole pool area, and she goes, I won't tell anybody, and there's like 100 people out in the pool area, so of course at that point everyone's looking around going, oh, where are they,
But that was what, like 82?
82, yeah.
So one-on-one, they were touring for one-on-one, the Cheap Trick
I
album.
Think so, yeah.
And
yeah.
Was Aldo headlining?
No, we had a big hit. I mean, Fantasy was number 3 on the charts at the time, but no, we were opening.
Yeah.
And
you didn't play on the record, right? You were
right. I came in right after it was done. He flew to San Francisco to put a band together, and I started getting all these calls from people, and so I went and auditioned and got it. But
okay, yeah, so he made the record in Canada with just like studio musicians probably, and then
right.
When he had
he played a lot of it. He actually made he recorded a lot of the record at the Power Station, Bon Jovi's uncle's
right.
studio.
Right. That's right. Yeah, Bon Jovi had a connection with him.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Matter of fact, we had John used to come to our parties in New York and stuff, and so when we had some time off at one point, we went and saw him play opening for Southside Johnny and the Asbury Dukes one night, and then he was playing a club down in New Jersey the next night, just kind of a club gig, and doing covers and stuff.
Yeah, he didn't even have a record out then.
No. Matter of fact, he was trying to get Aldo to kind of help promote him, and like he gave me one of his cassettes, and I remember it had Runaway on it, and he's like, give this to Aldo, and it's funny. And
wow.
It was like about 2 years later, I was off the road, so I'd gone to Laughlin, Arizona to play a club gig for a weekend for fun with some friends, and I was sitting out on the beach, and all of a sudden I hear the radio, I'm like, she's a little Runaway, and I'm like, and I started singing along with it, and I'm like, what the hell is this? I recognize it. And then I'm like, oh my God, it's that John guy. He did it. He's on the radio. And of course, the rest was history.
Yeah,
and
wow,
we got to laugh about it later. I ended up, with Winger, we opened up for Bon Jovi sometimes. And I'm like, John, remember me from Aldo? And so, we both found our way. So
yeah, that's awesome.
He found a lot bigger way, obviously. But I'm like, dude, you did it right, man.
Yeah, some of us. He's like the only guy, they're like the only band that survived the era almost and kept going and kept being successful.
It's really amazing. And, he really is just, you just never can predict, It's like I wouldn't have maybe called it, you think like, oh man, out of all those bands, who would be there's going to be one band that'll really stay, it's so hard to predict in this business, Yeah, you just found a way to cross over through the times, It's great. More power to them, man. I'm always, for anybody that can find their way, I'm supporting them,
So what was, I always get the impression that Aldo Nova was kind of an eccentric guy, maybe, was he, or?
He was not simple to work for, but we were all young and dumb and angsty, so I haven't kept in touch with him over the years, but I gotta imagine he's mellowed like all the rest of us have, all the bands were kind of young and cocky back then, that's what we were supposed to do. But like I was telling one of the other guys earlier, that's what's been fun about the cruises is we've all kind of gotten a chance to just hang on a boat together and trade stories and find out where our lives have all gone, and everyone's gotten a lot nicer and a lot mellower, and now we're just one big happy family, you know?
Yeah.
And we're all just grateful to still be doing music, so.
Yeah, and it's funny how the way there was that divide between music fans in the 90s is all, it's all gone.
All gone. No, we all hang. And matter of fact, at least one or two members from every single band out there lives here now.
Yeah.
And we all hang together and have barbecues and laugh at how stupid we were. So it's awesome.
Yeah. I was thinking about how In the Heart of the Young was like, seemed like it was a much more ambitious record. Like, you guys were trying to be more creative and...
Well, we were trying, or, you know, we wanted to kind of put something out that was a little more progressive. And as it turns out, I mean, the record that came out was not the record we recorded.
Right.
The record we handed in, the label said no.
Yeah.
They just said, this is too progressive. Where's, you know, Madeline and 17? And we wrote kind of more like a, it sounded kind of like, you know, Genesis or something.
Yeah.
But so they said, you guys got to go back to the drawing board and give us something we can put on the radio. So that's, you know, when Can't Get Enough and Easy Come, Easy Go were written after the fact. So, but, you know, we got some good ones on there, like, you know, oh, God, what's on that one? Rainbow in the Rose and stuff like that.
They Will Never See.
Yeah, so it was a nice blend in the end, I think. You know, they were right. We shouldn't have just taken a left turn, you know?
Yeah, I guess that's true, but definitely once I learned that story, you could really tell how those singles just stand out and don't fit with the rest of the material. Yeah. And then you had a couple of songs that you cut off that you replaced with those songs? Or?
Yeah, and I don't remember what they were, but we always had a kind of a stockpile of songs. I mean, you know, none of us were at a loss for tunes and writing, and, you know, and Kip and Reb just wrote so... They had such a good way they did it. It was hard for me to kind of keep up, you know. Like, every once in a while I'd slide one in, but, you know, Reb has got, like, he's the endless guitar part factory, and Kip is so great at taking his little part and just turning him into an instant song. So, I think I'm going to start writing now for their next one, whenever that is. Maybe it'll be in 2 years, and maybe I can get one on there.
I saw Kip last summer play just acoustic.
Yeah, he's amazing acoustic.
He's so talented.
Amazing.
Yeah.
He's so... Kip is, you know, he's taken a lot of flack over the years, but as it's turned out, and I think everyone's realized now, the guy is definitely one of the most talented musicians out there. I mean, you know, all the... you know, getting nominated last year for a Grammy for... And, you know, his record, his classical record debuted on iTunes at number one, and now he's doing Get Jack, the musical. Matter of fact... Right now, he's in Prague recording the strings for Get Jack this week. So the guy is a scary talent.
You know, I have this record. It's called, it's a KAZY record. It's a radio station record from, like, Denver, from Colorado.
Wow.
And there's a Winger song on there, and it's Kip and, like, two of his brothers.
Oh, yeah. Nate and Paul. Yeah, they had a band for years together.
It's called Winger.
Wow.
It came out in maybe, like, 81, 82, something like that. I forget what the song's called, but it's a really cool song. It's kind of like a progressive, like an 80s progressive.
Oh, yeah. He was writing tons of that stuff back. Yeah. When I first met him, he played me this couple songs. I was like, oh, my God. And then he looked, and there was like 50 songs on this thing. And I go, what is all this? And he goes, oh, this is the stuff I wrote last year. And I'm like, holy crap. The guy is very, very prolific.
Yeah.
You know? So
well, you probably got to go talk to somebody else, huh?
I don't know. What's it? Yep.
2 o'clock.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks a lot for talking.
Hey, man, no problem. Thanks for taking the
time.
You. Awesome.
Sorry. Mind if I give you one of these?
No, not at all.
So,
are you rolling?
Yeah, I'm rolling.
Hello, everybody.
Howdy.
One thing I was thinking about is, do you know like the months that you recorded Violation at the record plant? It's was it in 76 or 77? It came out in 77, but
was it either the
and by
end?
By the way, you should tell who we are. That's Doobie,
Joe X Doobie, and Brendan Harkin.
Brendan Harkin from Stars.
Stars, yeah. It. Which, so, by the way, I'm a huge fan.
Cool. Well, you know, Violation, what time of year did we do that? Like in the fall or summer?
I thought it was winter. It was probably the end of 76.
You think it was winter? I thought it was summer.
Or the beginning of 77.
Well, let's see. So
that's what I...
Yeah, I would say it's probably late 76 is when we did it.
Yeah, because so...
And it came out in 77? Is that
Okay,
I'm glad
but
you
I don't know what like the release date was in 77.
No idea.
But, I don't know.
But what I was thinking about is, so Cheap Trick recorded their first album with Jack Douglas at the Record Plant in like October 76. So were you guys like right after them?
Yes, because I remember Jack. We had done our first album, and I remember Jack playing us a cut of the Cheap Trick record, or a rough, like, you know, when we were in to do Violation. So do you remember when that was, when their record was done?
It was in October 76
so
at the Record Plant with
Jack.
That's
when Violation was done.
And so that Jay Messina and Sam Ginsberg worked on yours?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, I talked to both those guys.
Hey, did Jay do that?
Yeah.
Cheap Trick record
too? Yeah.
Okay. So Jack was doing Aerosmith, Cheap Trick stars, Aerosmith. Yeah. You know, he was just working. He's working like that.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, if you remember when we were in Chicago, Cheap Trick hadn't done their first one yet.
They played a club and we went out to hear them.
We had the day off and we went down to see him play in Cicero or something.
Yeah, with Jack.
With Jack. And Jack was going to go see him live.
Yeah, to check him out.
You know?
And they
Where and when was this?
It was 76. It was a bowling alley or something in Cicero, South Chicago. And Jack was in Chicago to go see them play. We were in town. We had the day off.
We went with them. So that would have probably been early 76. We were on tour.
The bowling alley was in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Does that sound right?
Well, I don't know. Maybe it wasn't a bowling alley.
It was just a bar.
Okay. It was in Chicago. Yeah. You know it was in Chicago.
It was in somewhere South around Chicago.
Richie and I knew the guys in Cheap Trick long before they were Cheap Trick. Because I was in a band in Wisconsin who was managed by Adam Manny. I remember when they were still the Grim Reapers.
Yeah.
Were they the same guys?
Well, it was Rick and, you know, and then Richie knew them when they were Fuse.
Yeah.
So we were there, we saw them, we were standing in the parking lot, they roll up, Rick comes bouncing out of the bus, and he's dressed like the way he was now.
Yeah, kind of like you are now.
Yeah, right, it's kind of like...
Yeah, you do look a little like Rick.
And Richie goes, what the fuck is that, right? And Rick goes, I've always been like this. We're going, get out of here, I know you. Yeah. Don't give me that crap.
But I was blown away by him I never knew anything about him before.
Fantastic.
You want to go hear this band? And they just were like, they were so funny. I mean, Rick was so funny.
Yeah.
You know, I
love them. You know? I absolutely love them to death.
I never loved their records.
I thought they made really good records. I did.
You know, I mean, it wasn't for me. I'm not criticizing them. I just never cared for them.
But you loved them live.
But I sure loved them when I saw them in the club.
Yeah.
You know? They were like cartoons. And, because, you know, like Rick is a cartoon.
Yeah.
So, and they were nice guys.
Nice guys.
Did we ever gig with them?
No, but...
We were in the same places at the same time sometimes. I remember being backstage with Rick at somebody else's gig. And, you know, just hanging with them. And real nice guys. You know?
Yeah.
And you said you were in a band managed by Adam Manny?
I was in high school in Wisconsin.
What band was that?
The band was called The Denims. I was living in Janesville. Those guys are all from Rockford, and Adam Annie managed both of us. Their band was a little higher up on the charts, but he managed us, he managed them, he managed Steve Miller. You know, I mean, he managed everybody. If you were from Wisconsin, Adam Annie managed you.
So you grew up in Wisconsin?
A couple years.
Yeah, so I grew up in Wisconsin,
Where?
Waukesha.
Waukesha.
That's where I grew up, but I live in Madison now. I had a meeting with Adam. I'm working on a book about Cheap Trick.
Are you?
And I had a meeting with Adam Manny like a year ago, and I'm supposed to meet with him again in September.
I was at the gig when Otis Redding didn't show.
You were there.
And those
at
guys
the factory.
Were opening up, and that's kind of ironic that the Grim Reapers were opening for Otis, and Otis never came.
Yeah, his plane crashed into Lake Monona on the way to the show.
That
was the one. He was playing. Supposed to play.
And you were
the
there. So were you lined up outside waiting? And they announced. Supposedly they opened the window and said with like a megaphone that he died. You were there.
Yeah.
You remember
I
that?
With me and two other guys in my band all went down because it was, you know, it was both Adam Annie and it was local, and we all love Otis Redding anyway.
Yeah.
So
do you remember when they announced that his plane crashed?
I don't remember. I remember I was there.
Did you stay for the gig when the Grim Reapers played? And they brought in, who did they bring in? Ken brought somebody in from Milwaukee to play the gig, and they did like a tribute to Otis Redding.
That night.
Yeah.
Wild.
Yeah, it was pretty weird. It's pretty weird. Wow. But I mean, that's so when they became Cheap Trick, there was no new news to me.
Yeah.
It was nothing new to me.
Yeah. Did you ever, when did you leave that area?
I was back in New Jersey where I live now by the end of 68.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Right? Okay. I was living in Wisconsin like 65, 66, 67.
Okay.
You know, back then.
So you had interviewed them for your podcast?
No, only Bunny. He's the only one I'm talking to.
Okay, he's pissed, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's not a good situation.
It's not good. Yeah, it's not good.
It's a little strange.
They kicked him out. Well, they wanted to kick him out, but since it's a company owned by all four.
You can't fire me, I quit, you know?
Yeah. Well, he owns one-fourth of the business.
Right.
So you can't just say you're kicked out of your one-fourth of the business.
Right, right.
So now they tour and they still have to pay him 25%.
Really? Well, that's pretty sweet. Yeah. He's got cigarette money.
Yeah.
That's good. He's the only guy in the band I never really knew. I knew Tom and Robin and Rick a lot better.
Yeah.
Bunny, I never really gotten to know.
Wow, that's... See, I thought I would come here and ask all you guys about Cheap Trick and just see what you... And here you were in a band that was managed by Animani.
I'm a headian.
That name's familiar to me.
Ken Animani.
Animani, and I don't know why, but probably because of
he,
that.
He basically ran Wisconsin.
Okay. Now, was Richie involved with him in any way?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Richie Rana was involved with Animani?
Oh, sure.
Really?
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
He was in Wisconsin.
He was
really?
Yeah. His band was called...
Bungie.
His band was called Bungie. And I had gone back to New Jersey, and Rich moved to Appleton. And he was in a band called Bungie, and Ken managed them, too.
And when was that?
74, 74, 6, 80.
Were they playing the same clubs as Cheap Trick?
It was earlier than that. Richie played in Bungie, like, in Wisconsin, like, 70.
Okay, but that's when didn't he know them from that time?
Yeah.
I wonder if Richie would talk to me for my book.
Oh, he'd be happy to. You want his number? I'll give you his number.
Yeah, sure.
Call him up.
You talk, I'll give you his number.
Okay. So Stars, some of the guys came from Looking Glass, and Richie had been in, been in Stories.
Okay.
Were you in a band before?
A quick genealogy of that?
Yeah.
Well, Doobie and three other guys were a frat band at Rutgers in Jersey, probably in 1970-ish. And they got somehow they played a gig in New York. They got a record deal on Epic. Clive Davis signed them. They did a record, they got a number one song, which was that's a really strange story too, because it was like a dead album. Some DJ from Washington D.C. Tell me if I'm getting this right. Started playing that song like after
Brandy.
It was a complete and it turned into a number one record. Yeah. So anyway, after that happened, they did a second record, and then Elliot
With Arif Martin.
With Arif Martin, that's like the Atlantic dude that produced Aretha and all these great R&B
the Rascals.
Yeah. And the guy who wrote and sang Brandy decided he was going to leave, like typically a lot of times people do, and that he was going to have a great solo career.
Right.
So he quit, and that's when they got me.
We hired
I actually did one tour with them when Elliot was still in the band. We did the Mike Douglas show. And
Brendan's first gig with us was the Mike Douglas show.
Yeah, and the second gig was the Electric Cow.
So you were in Looking Glass for a while.
Yeah, so I was in Looking Glass, the original version of Looking Glass for, I don't know, one tour, maybe 3-4 months, something like that. Then Elliot left, and so now what do we do for a singer? So that's when we decided we were going to get a front man. That was my idea.
Because
what they wanted to do, how can we be like a rock band and like get encores and stuff? Because Looking Glass never got that. Looking Glass was a little bit more like a club date band. So I said, well, let's audition singers. Let's get a really hot front man. So we auditioned a bunch of guys. Michael comes down in his powder blue, like tight-fitting shirt and pants. And sits there with a guitar and sings Cool One and... Rock this town. And we said, we got to get this guy. This is Elvis Presley. You know, we just auditioned Elvis Presley. So we got him in the band. And we stayed Looking Glass for about a year. We had just talking about it. We rang the last pennies out of Looking Glass. And we went all over the country playing clubs and all kinds of stuff. And no road crew. I mean, we did it all ourselves. We really did well. And then after that, somehow we got hooked up with a couple of managers. We turned into Fallen Angel, which was an interim band. We made a record on Arista that never came out, except a couple singles. And then somehow I think Peter Sweeble bumped into Sean.
Right.
So Fallen Angel recorded a whole album for
Arista. Wow. So actually he got signed twice by Live Davis on two different labels.
One of the few people that can say Clive.
Did the Fallen Angel record sound more like Looking Glass or more like
more
Stars?
More like Looking Glass. But it was kind of a
transition.
It was a transition period. It's a little more rocked out. You know, a little bit more rocked out, but not a whole lot. I mean, it had a guitar player that could
kind of
wail.
And it had keyboards, though, too.
And it still had keyboard player. The keyboard
and Michael
player
singing.
And
Michael
singing.
Lee Smith.
Yeah.
Right. And me playing the drums.
Yeah. Yeah. So then after that, we got involved with O'Coin through Peter Sweeble, the bass player. He knew Sean Delaney, something like that. And
Alan Miller was managing us, and Alan Miller left to go work for O'Coin.
Yes, so it kind of happened simultaneously. Peter knew Sean from the bathhouses in New York and stuff.
It was the Eagle.
Well, whatever. You know, it was just a New York thing. You know, it fell together. And that's when we turned into Stars. We were in for Fallen Angel for a while, and we were going to stay there. We got Richie in the band. Sean Delaney thought we should have two guitars. That's the rock and roll thing. It was like, we need to get rid of the keyboard.
Yeah.
So that was the end of Looking Glass for sure.
Like,
that
was
sound.
Was Richie joining the band like the catalyst to go heavier, more hard rock sound?
The idea was to do that, and I think that's why we got a second guitar player.
Yeah.
So we could have two guys really cranking it out.
All of a sudden,
you know?
The keyboards
was gone.
Yeah.
Guitar player.
That was why.
He wanted to be more direct.
Yeah, and then, of course, working with Sean Delaney, who's the guy that worked with Kiss originally and really got them refined their thing.
Yeah.
We started working with him, and he refined our thing. And it got even heavier, and it got more staged, and it got the equipment, and it got the look, and it got haircuts, and it got clothes. You know, so, and that's how it happened. You know, so by the time we did a demo at Record Plant, O'Coin shopped it, got offers from, I'd say, probably most record companies, because any record company would sign anything from O'Coin, I think, at that point. It was Sean. Kiss had just had Alive, and it was just, you know, monstrous. And then the rest is kind of semi-history, you know?
Yeah.
Did three albums. I'm in the band. I left the band. A couple other guys came in. They did one more album, and then it just kind of fell apart, you know? It's hard, man.
And then they did the Hellcats. Richie
yes,
and Michael
that's
did
right.
the Hellcats.
You were in that. Yeah, you were.
The original Hellcats.
You played bass.
Well, no. Peter Skance played bass. Oh. You were in it. So he forgot.
No.
He was there and I wasn't. And
no.
I remember hearing him.
No, you were in it.
Well, I did some of it, but that was Stars. That was a later version of Stars.
I don't know what I was
doing. Anyway, he didn't know what he's talking about. But it's okay. A long time ago, so forgive
me. I drove down here from Wisconsin. I stopped at St. Louis, went to some record stores, and I found there was Stars Live in Canada, I think. It Stars Live
wasn't
in America.
In that. That was when they were doing
the fourth album, Coliseum Rock.
They were too expensive, so I didn't buy them, but I really wanted to.
we were up in Canada, Toronto.
Yeah, live at the Alma Combo.
We played the Alma Combo, where the Stones had just played like 2 weeks before that.
While they were doing the record up there.
Yeah, we just said, let's get out and play a live gig, so we played that.
This is an interesting piece of trivia. Jack Richardson, who produced the Guess Who records, and Bob Ezrin was involved up there with Nimbus 9 and that
Alice
kind of
Cooper.
Stuff, Alice Cooper and all that stuff. He produced the Fallen Angels record. And then he also produced Coliseum Rock record.
So I did two albums with Jack Richardson in Toronto for two different labels and two different bands.
Right. And got signed by Clive.
By Clive Davis twice.
Two different bands and two different labels. So we were the first band signed by Clive when he bought Bell Records and turned it into Arista.
He was transitioning Bell into Arista.
Right.
And we were
right.
his first rock band.
Right. Well, we did a song on the Fallen Angels record called Madison Avenue Hitler. And had a big thing called Hitler. And, you know, Clive's Jewish, and Bob Fiden, who was a guy, was in a human
jet.
They didn't like that.
No,
I think that kind of turned to negative. That's why Fallen Angels didn't really work for them after that. But that was good, because then it turned into Stars. If we had been successful at Fallen Angel, I don't know. It wasn't really what anybody wanted to do necessarily.
Yeah,
that's not
it's,
you.
That's the
no, that's not me. That's the guy
same,
that was sitting over there.
That's the same as the Kiss story where Gene and Paul had a record deal as
Wicked Lester. Yeah,
and then they had the tape of that demo.
Do you ever hear that?
Yeah,
it's good. It's good.
I've never heard it.
But it's just not the kind of music that it sounds like the same thing you're saying.
Kind of like
Fallen
Angel.
Yeah,
kind of rocky, a little bit, kind of poppy, and it's actually pretty. It's pretty interesting harmonically and stuff. More interesting than Kiss, you know. I mean, not for me.
It's very different. Like, there's barely any similarities. Yeah.
I wouldn't mind listening to it.
I don't have it anymore.
I can get it. I mean, I can get it.
It's probably on YouTube if you ever go on YouTube.
Hey, let's look it up.
Yeah.
You guys talk amongst yourself. I'm going to listen.
So I was going to ask that. So then when you make Attention Shoppers, it's like got more of like a power pop sound, like not as much hard rock. Well, but that's probably my favorite Stars album because the songs are great.
After the first two albums, we wanted to do the third one again with Jack at the record plant, but he was still hung up with doing Aerosmith.
And doing rocks.
And we doing rocks, and they couldn't get their act together. They were having health issues, shall we say?
Yeah, we were just hanging around, and we thought, we can do this.
Capitol said, we want another record, and we said, well, we want to do it too. So we said, much the same way that Looking Glass produced the version of Brandy that you know, we said, give us a good studio and a producer or an engineer we can talk to, and we'll do it.
Yeah.
So we went in, and basically he produced it.
Yeah, for better or for worse. But there's a lot of people that really like that, right?
I love it,
But it was probably a mistake. I think if we had waited and stayed with Jack and done a third record with them, or, you know, I always had a theory that Kiss had worked with Bob Ezrin and done Destroyer, which I think is their... by far greatest.
That's my favorite.
A lot of people hate it. A lot of Kiss fans hate it.
Yeah, it's not my favorite.
But I think it was a really, really well done record. Yeah. And well written, because Bob co-wrote the songs with them and stuff. If we had done that, I think would have been a really good
thing. With Bob Ezrin.
Yeah, it was never brought up, but that would have been really good. Because after we did our first record, then Kiss wanted to work with the people we worked with to do their next record, which was what?
Rock and Roll Over.
Yeah, maybe. But Jay Messina, the engineer for Stars, he did Destroyer.
Yeah,
they wanted to sound more like us.
Yeah.
Well, I used to go in and do demos with Gene and Paul.
Really? Yeah.
They used to call me up because Peter
was sleeping.
So they would call me up, and it would just be either me and Gene or me and Paul and down to Electric Lady or something and just doing...
Do you remember some of the songs you played on?
Gene just wrote me an email asking me if he could put one of them on his...
The vault
thing. And I said, sure. It was very nice of him to ask.
Yeah.
The old Gene wouldn't have done it. But he was very kind to ask, and I said, sure. The only one I really remember doing was I Stole Your Love.
Oh, wow, that's my favorite Kiss song.
Oh, yeah, I did the demo.
What's
for
the
that.
Name of it?
I Stole Your Love.
Wow, okay. That's awesome. Well, I guess one thing I was going to ask you is, like, how did Jack Douglas work as a producer?
Like, I love Jack.
Did he just have you play live in the studio? Like, he didn't really do that much, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they spent their time, you know, getting sounds and stuff.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he just kept it moving, you know? I mean, I don't remember him ever really bossing anybody around, like, especially for the first record.
It was all ready to go.
We just went in and played it. It was done from start to finish, mixed and everything in 3 weeks.
Yeah. The first album was cooked when we showed up.
Yeah, and probably some of the vocals may even have been live.
Maybe.
Used some of the live vocals. And
I'll give you a good example on Violation. The version of Cool One was the only time we had ever played it like that. We were in the studio.
It was a shuffle.
It was a boogie song.
Shuffle.
And we were in the studio farting around playing Sunshine of Your Love. And the beat for Sunshine of Your Love is da-da-da-ba-da. And Jack goes, play Cool One, just like that. And we go, what?
So we did.
So he goes,
we played
no.
it once, and that was it.
So the way you heard it there was live.
That was it.
And that probably
was a live vocal, my guess.
I think it was, yeah. And that was the only time we ever played it. And a lot of people here tell me that's their favorite song. And I go,
what's interesting?
Like,
I mean, occasionally some people, I don't really run in the rock and roll world, but occasionally I'll meet some people. And they're kids from the 80s or even some of them from the 90s. And they love Stars. And they weren't there from the beginning. You might be one of them.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I think what they can tell, maybe you tell me if you think this way. If they can tell that the music was played by five people
together.
And so it sounds different than records made even in the 80s, which were more like done a track at a time. They do the drums. They do it, you know. And it just sounds different, you know. It's got like a different energy vibe thing to it, and it's attractive to people that are used to now hearing more slick thing, something that's more slick, and they react well to it. You know, at least the people that can kind of that are
like that kind of thing, you know.
It was so. All of us in a room looking at one another at the same time.
And that's the same that happened for Violation, and same thing that happened for
Attention Shoppers.
Now, we did. There's a few overdubs on the first record. Like, I might have overdubbed a couple of solos and a couple of parts. Like, there's a slide thing on Fallen Angel that was overdubbed. I did that. And a couple of things, but most of it was live. On Violation, there were more overdubs, and those were Jack's. A lot of them were Jack's suggestions, and they were really cool.
Jack's specialty was coming up with very unique sounds that he would insert later.
Right.
After we were done, he'd say, "Give me a couple of days," and he would put on
percussion
weird
stuff.
Like he would jingle his keys, or he'd set off a fire extinguisher, or all kinds of just like audio things that you don't notice until the 20th time you would say, "What the hell was that?"
Yeah.
And he loved doing that.
Yeah, there's lots of sound effects on the first Cheap Trick album too, like little sounds. But you hear
headphones,
you hear this stuff going on.
Like weird little percussion.
Yeah.
He loved that stuff.
I'll have to listen closer to your first two records and put it on headphones to try to hear those little things.
Especially the second one.
The second one.
On Fallen Angel, when it goes da 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 da, sounds like a big gong. No. Got a wash tub, galvanized steel wash tub, filled it full of water, took a 58, put two rubbers over it, gaffers taped it up, threw it in the water. Had another 58 at the surface. I took the top part of a cymbal stand and a 16-inch cymbal and a timpani mallet. He speeded the tape up to 30 IPS. It went da-da-da-da-da. I hit the thing, and then I lowered it into the water. Right?
Something that took 2 hours to do. It took by really fast.
We took the tape back down to 15 IPS, and instead of it going beep, like that, it sounded like... Just made it up.
He's good. He's a good guy to be around. You know, you just wanted to kind of be around him. He was good. You didn't mind him being around. He didn't bug you.
I've been trying to talk to him for my book, but I haven't been able to. He said he would answer some questions over email, but then
You're writing a book?
I'm working on a Cheap Trick book, yeah.
Okay.
Cool. Well, ask Richie if you can get in touch with him.
Good idea.
Yeah. He's on Facebook.
Yeah, I know. I've emailed him questions, but then he didn't write back. Yeah. You know,
everything I read from him on Facebook is always about Trump, how much he hates Trump.
Yeah,
you know, like give it a freaking break, Jack. Okay, everybody knows you hate the guy. Just give it a fucking break.
So
tell me about your kids.
So I mean, you guys probably didn't realize it at the time, but like you were ahead of your time. Like you were.
So they say.
What you were doing
That's
in the
what
70s.
That guy over there said so too.
Yeah. It became very popular in the 80s, what you were doing in the 70s, you know?
That's true. You know, people took some of our stuff and developed their own thing later.
Yeah,
people took some of our stuff and did it and developed it later. So, you know, people that were really successful, you know, were Stars fans when they were 15.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
John Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. You know?
Sebastian Bach.
So good on them, you know? That's great. You know? Anything they could take and use, and great. I mean, I wish they'd maybe give me a boat or something.
Throw me a bone. Do one of my songs.
Give me a boat. You know, give me a car. Give me another Corvette. That'd be good.
And nobody ever really covered a Stars song that had a hit record, huh?
That would be really great.
Yeah.
You know, if you really love Stars so much, record a freaking song.
Yeah, then have
a
hit
me a
record.
Bone,
hey,
will
John!
Ya? Toss me a bone, will you?
Yeah, the hell with this. Whatever. Well, we're probably late.
Yeah,
for
I was going to say, I hope I'm not keeping
good
you
talking
from
to
next.
You. Yeah,
well,
do you
we
know
gotta
where
go.
We got to go?
I love
to,
it. Thank you so much.
talking about microphones.
So you think you can all... I only got the one mic, so... for you guys.
We just yelled in.
We yelled really loud.
Well, so, a big fan, by the way. I seen you guys last year at the pre-party, and I bought your EP, and One Night Love. Love it. Totally could have come out in, say, 89. You guys would have been in Metal Edge. You'd be famous by now if it was 80s.
Yeah, thank you.
That was the right time. Thank you, man.
Yeah. So I've heard your two new songs that you've released so far, and I remember at the show last year, it seemed like some of your new songs, you were going to more like a Metallica, almost like a thrash metal direction, but your new songs that I've heard, though, it seems like you're... Have you been doing that kind of stuff for the new album, like thrash inspired?
On the new record, there's a couple heavy songs that are like that, and basically the biggest thing with us that we've always been trying to do is we don't want to have to ever feel like we have to have a solo band to do anything else that we want. So we're gonna do everything that we want with our band right now. So
yeah.
When we write songs that sound like they're like radio friendly, like air metal songs, we're gonna do that. But if we feel like writing Battery, we're going to do that too. We're just going to do it all. We're just not going to be limited or held back by a label of any sort. We're just a heavy metal band.
Totally makes sense.
We're going to do whatever we want to do.
Yeah.
No matter what.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're definitely really big into a lot of the 80s stuff, but we really love like traditional metal, the new wave British heavy metal bands, and Metallica, something a little more thrasher stuff. So we want to play it all. All right, we have a lot of influences. We want to get it all in there. And I really think there's a lot of that represented on the new record. It's going to be coming out really soon. I just, the CDs are pressed. I just got the call yesterday. They're done. Wow. And it's called Raw Deal. And it's coming really soon. I know everybody keeps sending me messages and stuff every week. When's it coming out? When's it coming out? But as soon as I have it in my hand, we're going to announce a date and get that totally set. And it was produced by this guy, Michael Wagner. And he's the master behind the control board, and we're super pumped on how it sounds, and we're just really excited to get it out.
I love that idea of just any style of metal, just whatever, from hair metal to thrash.
And, yeah, we're just gonna do it all.
For sure. And you do it well. I mean, you don't have any peers like in this kind of music, especially in America. I mean, who else is doing it?
I think we're it. Like,
yeah.
I've never heard of any other band that, like, does the span as far as we do.
No.
Everybody really sticks to, like, one thing, but we're kind of just doing it all. And like I said, not being held back by any label. I don't want to be called a hair metal band. No. I don't want to be called a thrash metal band. I want to be called just a metal band. Like, hey, we do it all.
How about Denman?
Denman.
That's right. Denman.
That's right.
It's a great name.
Yeah.
Well, we need it so badly in America for this kind of music, for somebody to do this kind of music and do it well, so I really appreciate what you're doing very much. I mean, I grew up reading every issue of Metal Edge and watching every episode of Headbangers Ball and, you know, bought every cassette you could think of, a lot of them produced by Michael Wagner.
Well, that was really crazy when we, like, met Michael and everything. I was like, wow, he's on all of my CDs. This is crazy.
And so how does Denman measure up to those bands that you produced back in the 80s? I mean, they're doing the exact same kind of thing, like just as good as those bands did back then, right?
I think better.
Yeah.
I think better because the level is way higher by now. You know, in the 80s, it's like when you see a guitar player from like 75, and in 75 you went, wow, he's amazing. By now he'd be a lame duck, you know, yeah. And then... But now the level has changed so much. So if that would have been in the 80s, they would have been all millionaires by now.
Yeah.
So you have to wait another couple of months.
Ah, yeah, yeah. The 2080s are still coming.
I joke, I'm like, hey, I'm still going to live through the 80s. It's just going to be 2008, yeah. Maybe, if I make it there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be weird when we get to where the decades are the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s.
Yeah, we're almost in the 20s.
Yeah, we're almost in the roaring 2020s.
Yeah, the roaring 20s, yeah. Yeah, so Raw Deal, like the Schwarzenegger movie.
It was, and it's a really bad one. So.
Yeah, it is. It's terrible.
It's a terrible movie.
I went and saw it in the theater with my dad because I loved Commando, and I think that was his next movie.
That was a great one.
Commando's amazing. Yeah. I want that movie every day of my life.
Rod Deal is the one. My dad always says, yeah, I'm in the mafia. Yeah. That's what Rod Deal was.
Yeah, that movie is so bad. But anyway, it's more, the meaning to it for us is a lot of like the hard rock, heavy metal bands nowadays, especially in America.
Yes.
Like, dude, they all get like the shaft, man. They all get the Raw Deal.
Yeah.
They're always getting screwed over. It's terrible. So we're like, yeah, man, that's our album. Is that we're a heavy metal band. We're always getting the shaft from pretty much all, like, a lot of the music industry. Like, nobody promotes heavy metal, and,
yeah,
and especially like at a mainstream level anymore. So it's like, yeah, we're all getting the Raw Deal, but that's like inspiration from our for our record.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I've been sad about it for years that there's like rock and roll in general in America is just gone.
Yeah,
you know, there's so few young bands that are doing it.
I think one of the biggest problems is nobody wants to promote the young bands. There's young bands doing it, but nobody wants to put anything.
Yeah, it's true.
If any label was cool, they would just get somebody. They would be looking for somebody like that, and they put you on tour with another band that's already big.
Yeah.
There's a lot of bands, even that I know around here, that are just amazing. The songs are amazing. If somebody put anything behind it, they would be somewhere by now.
Yeah.
But I mean, the same thing happens to us. Nobody wants to do that. They're afraid of a risk or whatever. In the 80s, if a guy heard something that he thought was cool or something special, like, let's give him a shot. Let's give him a few records.
Yeah.
Nowadays, yeah, they don't care. You have to have 100,000 Facebook followers.
Yeah.
It's just people wanting to just click a like button on something. Something means nothing. They don't even have to know anything. That's the only way to get anything out there now. So it's really... It's really too bad.
Yeah.
Because the potential's all there. There's a lot of guys like us that are hungry out here that are killing it 24/7. Probably better than a lot of the really big bands that you're seeing.
Yeah.
But nobody wants to give it a shot.
Yeah.
It's too bad. They're always worried about cash.
Yeah, so like they have to, it's like an investment, you know? They have to, a bigger band's going to make money on tour, but if you take a younger band on tour, they're not going to sell as many tickets and like, obviously, because they're brand new and people don't know about them yet. But it's a big money thing, and it's too bad because there are a lot of awesome young bands that I see, you know, in some of these clubs. I'm just like, man, these guys should be on tour with so-and-so. It'd be amazing. But it's really tough to get that chance because promoters don't book young bands like that anymore.
Are you guys going to go out on tour when your album comes out?
I mean, there's no possible way of it. I mean, I work like 50 some hours a week at my job.
So do I.
to rent a tour bus or have anything that's usable to actually tour with costs thousands and thousands of dollars. I mean, we're going to do our very best, but touring's really not an option unless somebody's going to put money behind us and sponsor us. Or if we got on a tour with another band, that would be worthwhile. But right now, if we go on tour, that's basically just going to put us $10,000 in the hole. It's not possible.
Well, we're definitely going to do small runs. So we have quite a lot of ties up and down the East Coast, so we'll keep doing stuff like that. We just got booked at Rocklanta with Dangerous Toys and Firehouse and Tyketto and Lillian Axe, and there's a ton of bands on that bill. We're just going to keep doing some of the festival stuff like that
smart.
As possible.
Yeah.
Anything we can do to get in front of a good-sized audience and have people see us play. And we'll do some small club runs, but I don't see a 30, 40-day tour thing coming down anytime
soon.
You're
not coming up to Wisconsin.
Probably not.
You guys got to get word of
mouth. Somebody that books.
Like your first step is probably just getting word of mouth. So like you're saying, you go to those festivals, all those people that see you, they tell their friends, that's what you need.
We've had really good luck doing stuff like that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's killer. But it's just to do a small club tour by yourself.
No, in America, no rock bands can tour. Oh. I mean, one of my favorite bands, the Wild Hearts, they come a couple times in a decade and play in New York, and that's it. And everybody goes, I went to New York to see them because they can't do a tour here. They can't, you know?
It's like,
but
the
they could tour Europe. They could tour all over Europe all fucking year long.
Oh, yeah, totally. Even other bands like Airborne. When have you seen Airborne play in the United States?
Yeah.
Hardly ever.
Yeah, even more current bands. Yeah. Yeah.
They have a good name, too, man. They have several records out on Roadrunner. They have four records out now. Just awesome rock and roll.
Yeah.
They don't come here because
they won't draw a crowd.
They're going to lose a ton of money.
I think it's like the same thing. If you had them come here and play in front of like another huge metal band or rock band, they would make a killing.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to do it.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to be the person to put the two together. If Airborne was opening for Five Finger Death Punch on a tour, they would like they would annihilate and it'd be amazing. Yeah. But nobody wants to do it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's crazy.
So what are your plans?
We're gonna try to do
as many like festival kind of things as we can get booked on and just do our best and hopefully keep building on what we have. And then maybe eventually we'll draw the right attention.
Yeah.
I know like bands like Skullfist, they're a smaller band from Canada, they're one of my favorite bands out.
Yeah.
They're putting out a new record, they got on like Napalm Records and like all sorts of stuff. So if we can get attention from somebody like that, then even if we could do like a small tour with another band just a little bit bigger like that, it would be a worthwhile thing. But until that opportunity comes, we're just gonna keep getting in the van, doing weekend treks, and working our asses off.
Mostly just like regional stuff. I mean, being in Nashville, we're in a great spot because you're close to Atlanta, Bowling Green. So we're just going to start doing a little circle and just keep making it bigger and just branching out. And like we played in upstate New York a bunch. We did Rochester with the Iron Maidens, the female tribute band. And 2 months ago, we did a festival in Maryland, the Sleazy Slimy Sunday event with LA Guns and Ted Pulley and a bunch of stuff like that. So we're starting to get some really good gigs. We're just going to keep attacking it, and keep looking for that tour that we can hop on with somebody. But that's the plan.
I love your story. Like, I remember hearing you on the Decibel Geek, and it seemed like what happened was you guys grew up in the middle of nowhere. You just happened to get into this kind of music that nobody your age is really into, but you just immersed yourself in it. And so,
man, when you're on a farm, like away from everything, that's all you got to do.
Yeah.
I had my dad's Van Halen CDs, I had like a Whitesnake cassette, a Ted Nugent cassette, and all we did was build jumps for our bicycles, and this music was blasting 24/7 since I was in second grade.
And we didn't have internet or cable TV, so there was nothing. We weren't like watching stuff that's like telling us, oh, this is cool, this is popular. We're just like, oh, I found this Whitesnake Slide It In cassette tape, and I'm gonna listen to it until it doesn't work anymore. So we just like found all these old cassette tapes.
So all of a sudden, like the 80s for us, that was what we had. So it wasn't like wanting to be throwback. It wasn't anything like that. We're just looking at all these posters and all these Guitar World magazines from like 1988. And to us, that was what was cool. That's all we had. And we're like, wow, this is awesome. Then we like get out in the real world. I was like, wow, you guys are throwback at heart. I'm like, no, I just look like all the dudes that I thought were cool when I was growing up. Because there was this massive divide. I don't know any popular culture stuff from nowadays. I work with these kids that are like 22 years old at my job, and I don't have a clue on what any of them are talking about.
Yeah.
They all thought I was like 35 years old or 40 because I'm just like making references to movies like the Blues Brothers and talking about old school stuff. Like, they have no idea because all I did was grow up with the force-fed media stuff.
I love it how that's what it took for guys your age to be so into this kind of music and get so good at it was to like be in that isolated situation and just.
I mean, like, we didn't have smartphones or internet and all that stuff. We had a guitar.
I gotta go. I'm on that pillow.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Michael.
See you guys later.
See you, Michael. Yeah, we just played a lot of guitar.
Yeah, obviously.
And that's what we had to do, and it was like super cold in the winter time, so you can't go do anything. We just played guitar, and we got really damn good at it.
Yeah.
And then we moved here and met up with Michael, and now we have tons of friends that are in this hard rock circle, and we're really starting to meet tons of people and make some stuff happen for us. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Seriously, I love this kind of music, and I grew up buying every cassette tape by every band like this. And I fucking love what you guys are doing. I really love it. And it's so great to see a band that's your generation doing this kind of music and doing it so perfectly. Like, you know, I love it. It's really awesome. But I see your frustration with, like, because you know you're good, right? You know good.
It's hard.
And
to
just
not,
how do you get?
How do you like get to that next level? Yeah. It's hard to not get like jaded.
Yeah.
Against things. But
well, it's hard to be a rock fan at all in America and not be jaded.
Yeah, no, that's very true. I mean, I still like what I like. I mean, for kind of like, I disconnected the antenna in my car just so I
would never.
I don't even
to the radio
hear the radio. I don't care. I'm jaded against like all the stuff. Like people are basically just trying to hold you back because you're not popular, is what it feels like. Even though it's probably not really the case, but it feels like it. Because nobody wants that to like be a thing.
Just everybody loved it when they're making millions of dollars selling millions of records. Then all of a sudden, they change the industry over completely.
Yeah.
And it's just somebody that sees a band like us, like, oh, I'm not going to make that much money off of you guys. The music industry right now is pretty in a really weird spot with all the streaming and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But it's like,
that's another thing.
If the money's not there,
streaming's ridiculous.
People don't care.
I mean, I've never used Spotify.
I don't have Spotify. I don't have Apple Music because that screws every artist.
Yeah.
Buy the record.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Like, if you really like a band, if you're really that big of a music fan, you'll go out and buy a CD. If you like a band, support that band. I don't like fair weather music fans. Like, yeah, I only pay $8 a month and I got everything I want.
Yeah.
It's like, cool. Everybody you're listening to gets screwed.
Yeah.
And it's also like way lower quality too, you know. Like,
you don't even hear it the way it's supposed to be played.
Yeah.
That sucks too, man. It's in a weird spot, but we love what we do, and even if we just play small clubs, and we love to play, so we're just gonna
put out music that we're proud of. The music that I'm putting out, like our new record, is a record I would want to buy.
Yeah.
And that's really exciting for me, and I got to be really proud of that. We got to work with, I mean, literally the best producer of all time,
right.
Michael Wagner. So, I mean, I'm happy no matter what. I don't care if I'm ever a rock star. I don't care. I'm a musician, and I'm putting out music that I'm proud of.
Yeah, man, if anybody, you know, we're pretty easy to get a hold of. We just have our emails, denmanrocks@gmail.com. Anybody can shoot us a message on there. You know, for if anybody knows really good clubs regionally that we should be playing at, it's like, hit us up, man. We'll make a little drive and go do it. You know, we love to play.
And when your record comes out, the best thing to do would be for them to go to the website and buy it from you, right?
Exactly, because I'll mail you the CD. We get all the money from that. It's not like you buy a MP3 on iTunes or whatever. Like, they take half of it.
Yeah.
And then after like the fees and stuff, the band doesn't make that much money at all, and we just spend all this money like getting album covers drawn up and recording it and taking months off of work to do it. We got a lot of money in this thing, you know, and to be all said and done to have it go on Spotify and to make like,
yeah, like 0.003 cents a play.
The royalty checks come in, it's like a dollar, you know,
yeah,
and you have thousands of plays and it's like a dollar.
Did you see that Peter Frampton post where
he made $4,000 off of like 40 million streams or something.
Yeah,
it's
a ludicrous amount of streams, and he got a check for like $1,100 or something. Yeah, it's nuts.
That's not how it's supposed to work.
And that's like, those bands can keep playing and do good because they sold records back in the day. They made a lot of money. They have a really good name. So they can, all those guys, they're still doing okay, but like the new bands that are coming up, like, I'm 24 years old. I missed the heyday. I don't have a giant awesome name for myself because I wasn't around back in the day. We have a good name around here, but it's like when somebody goes to book your band, they're like, wow, these guys are really young. They only have, you know, one record that's coming out.
Yeah.
It's like, a lot of them know I want to take a chance on it, you know. It's tough to get awesome gigs, but we're doing the festival things, and that's really going well for us.
Yeah, that's what people don't understand, is if they don't buy the music, the bands can't exist.
And I hate it, and then you'll have the same people like, oh, you guys are just being greedy, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, we're not.
You can't do it if you don't make some money off
of
it.
Yeah, I mean, I work a job 50 hours a week.
Yeah.
I remember I had one guy say something on our Facebook post where we said we're doing a GoFundMe to start making this record, and somebody comments like, yeah, it's not cool when people just ask for a handout to do it. I was like, I sold everything I own to move to Nashville, packed my guitars up in my car, and just drove here, lived in a one-bedroom apartment with my brother, and then worked 50-some hours a week every week. I'm asking for a handout, dude.
I'm asking for a handout.
That's so
like,
funny. You guys recreated what they were doing 30 years ago when they were going to the strip.
We came to Nashville.
But that's exactly what those bands like that you love were doing 30 years ago. Yeah, it's awesome.
Everything like, hey, we're taking a chance, man. Yeah. Here we are.
Yeah.
But you can't consistently put, you know, all this money into a record and then put it out and then not make any of it back. So then you're basically working all this time to make money, not to pay your rent and to pay your bills, just to pay for your record.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it gets to be kind of brutal because you're like, man, we're just like working super hard and putting it all into like our passion and everything. And then it comes out. It's going to take you forever to recoup that money because it's thousands and thousands of dollars. People don't understand how much it actually costs to make a record. And
not even counting all the time.
The money lost from not working.
We had to take 2 months off of work to do it.
Yeah.
So that's thousands of dollars we lost there.
Yeah.
So like by the time we're said and done, man, it's easy to get up to that $20,000, $30,000 mark and then doing something like this. And then it's going to take years to pay yourself back. You just can't do that every single year. You know, it gets to be really tough.
You like lose all that time and money from recording. And they'd be like, oh, I guess get your band, do a tour. I'm like, okay, there's me missing another 2 months of work.
Yeah, that was a really shitty question I asked about if you were going to tour.
No, it's not shitty on your part. Just people don't understand what it takes. People think I was like, oh, yeah, you guys are just going to go tour. I'm like, I have rent to pay. I have car insurance to pay.
Of course.
I already lost thousands of dollars on top of putting thousands into this.
Yeah.
I was like, I wish I could. I had a Prevost. I wish I was opening for Five Finger Death Punch for 60 dates, playing in front of thousands of people, but that's not
even
happening.
Though they fucking suck. I call them Five Finger Shit Stench.
I know.
Their fans would like you. Yeah, that's
exactly.
The thing is you just got to get it in front of them.
And all those tours are buy-on tours anyway. So if you're an artist, you have to pay $30,000, $40,000 to do a 20-date tour with somebody like that.
Yeah.
So then you pay for the record, then you buy on the tour, and now you're like 70 grand in the hole. And it's like,
you gotta sell a lot of shirts.
You gotta sell a shitload of shirts.
And then when you're in a 1998 Ford Econoline van, you really can't pack that many t-shirts in. I assure you.
That guy's got Enough's Enough t-shirt on over there. That's funny.
That's cool.
I interviewed Chips Enough for my show a while ago.
I'm the filling guitar player, so every once in a while he calls me up and flies me out to Chicago and we go do some dates.
Right, yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
I'm working on a book about Cheap Trick, and I talked to this guy, Mick Favis, and he told me he formed Enough's Enough. And I was going to talk to him more, but I interviewed Chips Enough. That's a great band.
Nice. Yeah, dude, and we were like rehearsing at the same studio where Cheap Trick rehearses in Chicago, so that was a really cool experience. That was awesome.
Yeah, they're the greatest.
Yeah, they rock. It's a good time.
Well, why couldn't you go out on tour with them, open up for them?
Well,
you know, it's too bad. Yeah, I mean,
even they're playing the festival stuff.
They do.
Yeah. They don't really go out and do a 30-day tour by themselves.
Yeah, especially in the summer, they always get on some package tour and shit.
Yeah, so they're playing with Jack Russell and Bullet Boys, I think, on this Hair Nation tour they're about to do. There's a lot of dates on that, but that's like a package tour with just those three bands, you know. But if they're like headlining something, you know, I'll send Chip a text or whatever. But, hey, dude, you need an opening band? You know, he's the coolest guy. He's such a good guy. I'm sure, like, we can make that happen. We did the Rare Hair thing with them when Enough's Enough played here in Nashville, like, I don't know, six months ago.
How did Chips Enough find out about you to want you to fill in?
So that's a funny story. So I met Tori, their current guitar player, here in Nashville at a Rare Hair jam. I was doing like a bunch of 80s shit. And he saw me play there, and then he asked the guy that puts that on, his name was Tyson, he asked Tyson who would be good to do some filling in for him. And he referred me, and I sent Chip a video of me playing some old Enough's Enough songs, and he just texted me back and says, you got the gig. So I was like, sweet. So that was cool. So now, like, if they need me for anything, I just go do that too.
I mean, I know that you guys practiced a lot at like
probably played guitar constantly, but do you think you also have some natural talent? You think there's an element of just a natural gift?
Definitely, because I know some people that play for 10 years, and they're just
I've been playing guitar for over 20 years, but I can't play guitar solo, you know? I can just do chords and, like, write songs, but I can't play solo.
You really have to dive into it and put a ton of dedication. It's like anything, man. It's like some people are really good at drawing or painting a picture, you know? And some people can't do it at all. It's just like, it's that you have a knack for it, and then if you work really hard at it,
but like the way you
really
filled in for the tip last year, like how can you just learn all those songs like that?
No, I did that in a week.
Yeah, that's
they're my friends. I had both the records.
Yeah, right.
To them, but basically when I did that, like I naturally am more like a rock and roll, like Van Halen style guitar player, so like filling in with them, like it was like second nature. I didn't even have to know the songs, I just knew what it all was in my head, and I could just riff. We played Rocklahoma too, and it was just insane. It's really fun.
Yeah, but not a lot of people could do that.
I learn
every tip song in a week and pull off a show like that.
I probably take it for granted a little bit.
I think we have another interview to do.
Okay.
It was like we have a ton of them.
Yeah.
But it was great talking with you.
Yeah, I love it. And I can't wait for the record.
Dude, thank you so much, man.
Appreciate
you for taking the time and talking with us here.
Thank you, guys.
Heck yeah, dude. Right on.
Hell yeah, man. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Good to see you, man. Thank you.
Yeah, sure.
We're late for the next one. Woo!
Now I'm coming!
All right, so there you have it, Nashville Rock and Pod Expo 2018. Those are the kind of interviews that can come out of an event like this. I really enjoyed talking to these guys in person. It was so much fun having that conversation with Joe and Brendan from Stars. I really, really enjoyed that. And I think that conversation you just heard between myself and the Denman brothers was really enlightening and important. People need to think about that. Like we said in the interview, go to their website and buy their album from them. You need to support young bands like this, otherwise they can't even do it. So if there's going to be a history of rock and roll that continues on, if there's going to be young bands that can develop and have a career and create a catalog of music, they have to be supported. You have to buy their music, you have to purchase it, and the best way to do it is get it right from them, go to their website. They need record label support, they need tour support, they need bands to take them out on the road as an opening act. Otherwise, they just cannot do it. So if you want bands to have a discography, if you want there to be a band that develops a history starting from now, this is going to be their first album, and if you want to see them grow and make more records and see what it can turn into, they need support, as you can hear from that conversation I had with them. So if you like those songs you heard, Higher and Alive in Overdrive from their upcoming album, Raw Deal, if you enjoyed that music, I will let you know when the record comes out and you will be able to go to their website, buy the CD, vinyl, whatever they have on offer, buy it right from their website. Fuck Spotify, all right? Fuck streaming. You have to support these bands. And Spotify isn't supporting anybody except Spotify. So now I want to close out this episode with my appearance on the CGCM podcast live at the Nashville Rock and Pod Expo. You might remember Wally and Rich. They did a No Shame episode with me a few months back. They do a podcast called CGCM, Canadian Geeks Chatting Metal. They're great guys. I met them years ago through the Decibel Geek website when I used to write for the website. Wally was the editor of the website. Then Rich took over for Wally. Then they started their own podcast, and it was great to meet them. They weren't able to come last year, so this was their first time making the trek down for the Nashville Rock and Pod Expo. I'm so glad they did, and they were doing a great thing called the Canadian Inquisition, where they present you with 10 Canadian slang terms, slang for lack of a better word, and then you have to tell them what those terms mean. And it was difficult. It was very difficult. Not enough terms that came from SCTV or Strange Brew, so I didn't know that many, but it was really fun, and they shared my segment because they did this with a lot of different people. So go check out their episodes. It's going to be a lot of fun to hear it when their episodes come out with a whole bunch of different people taking the quiz. But I just have my segment here to put at the end of this episode. So this is me with Wally and Rich from CGCM taking part in the Canadian Inquisition. Thanks for listening, and remember, next week will be the Vinyl Countdown Rockin' Pod 2018 edition.
All right, we are here at the Nashville Rockin' Pod Expo, CGCM podcast.
I don't think we need to say that every time because we're going to edit this all
together,
true. Right?
So yeah, well, we'll just dip it.
Whatever, it sets the levels. We're here with our good friend BJ Cramp.
Some on the Rock and Or Roll podcast.
That's right. But some of our listeners may remember when we were guests on the Rock and Or Roll podcast.
Yes.
Yeah, it was great. No
that
shame.
Was a fun episode. Yeah.
No shame.
And Wally used to be my boss.
and we still need to do our
we got a battle of the playlist coming up where BJ's going to guest on our show. But right now here at the Nashville Rock and Pod, we're putting them through the Canadian Inquisition.
Oh, yeah.
And I got to tell you, there's a lot of pressure on you, man. I am looking for someone to take down Aaron Camaro because he is getting cocky about it.
Absolutely.
Oh, he keeps coming by to see where he is. He accosted me in the washroom to ask. That's bathroom.
Is washroom on there?
No, it's not on there. That's toilet, bathroom. Yeah. There goes our tiebreaker if we need it later. But anyway, he wanted to know if he was still number one. So I'm pulling for you here.
All right, here Beauty. We go. 1 point for each right definition of these Canadian terms. And, and sometimes we award half a point if we think you're close.
Okay.
All right, kerfuffle.
Kerfluffle?
Kerfuffle.
Kerfuffle. So it's kerfluffle without the L.
Yes, without right, the first L.
It must be like an argument?
We give him a half on
a
that.
Disagreement?
Yeah, I'll give you the half.
I'll give a half on that. Yeah, I'll give a half.
It's like an awkward situation, so a mishap kind of thing. So, all right.
I don't know if I deserve half. You think?
Well, we'll give you the half for now.
Okay.
Beaver tail.
Beaver tail?
Beaver tail.
Beaver tail, yeah. We've had some interesting answers to this one.
Okay.
Yes, just like that.
A spatula?
That's an interesting creative answer.
But not correct.
It's a Canadian dessert. It's a fry. It's like a donut, fried dough, okay. And it kind of resembles the shape of a beaver tail. So
okay.
Put chocolate on. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
The rest of us did not.
Well, we've had a few interesting answers.
Yeah, it's a one-night stand.
Yeah, well, could be.
Timmy's.
Timmy's?
Timmy's.
Timmy's.
Is that Tim Hortons?
Dingle.
It sure is.
All right. Looney.
Looney, did you say?
Looney, spelled L-O-O-N-I-E.
Well, they say Looney Bin in Strange Brew, right? So is it a crazy person?
No. Oh.
That's Looney spelled with a Y at the end. We're spelling it with an I-E.
Yeah. Yes. I just thought maybe Canadian spelled Looney with the I-E.
No. Well, we do spell things different sometimes, but that's not one of them.
So Looney is our dollar coin. We don't have a dollar bill anymore. So.
Okay.
All right. You're getting this one for sure, so this will put you... Hoser.
A hoser must be like a hick or a redneck, like a Canadian version of a redneck or something?
Yeah. That's pretty much slang for Canadians.
There's a variety. There's a bit broad spectrum on hoser.
Yeah.
It could be an insult, like you're an idiot, right now you hoser, and it could be like a Canadian.
But it's usually a Canadian. Things,
right? me and Lee McCormack, you know the podcast they do that are movies by minute, where they do one episode about each minute of a movie? There's a bunch of them.
No.
We're going to do Strange Brew.
Oh, that's cool.
I've been thinking of like... Because you know the story of why they invented Bob and Doug McKenzie? Because they had the Canadian version had one extra minute, and they asked for Canadian specific
content. It had to be Canadian content.
So they did that.
Yeah.
Which is,
and then it became so popular.
Yeah. So they must be the archetype of like a Canadian, like. Rural person who live like rural hick or what American is like a hick, or right? That is what it is.
Yeah, right on. Yeah. All right. So you're sitting, you got kerfuffle, half point for kerfuffle, you got Tim Hortons, and you got hoser. So you're at 2.5. Mickey.
Mickey?
Mickey.
I don't know. I don't, an alcoholic?
Well, it is alcohol related.
It's the smallest bottle at the liquor store that you can buy in Canada. It's usually flask shaped bottle that you can throw in your pocket, hence alcoholic.
So why is it called a Mickey?
I don't know the answer to that either.
Yeah,
but
not a clue.
I got a Mickey of vodka. Let's go party tonight.
Right? It was especially popular when you were underage because you could hide it easy, yeah. Right? Instead of bringing home the big bottle. Right. All right. Gitch.
Gitch?
Gitch.
G-I-T-C-H.
Is it a problem?
It's underwear.
Underwear. Gitch is underwear.
It really is.
Sometimes underwear can be a problem.
Depending on how it's fitting. All right. Double, double.
Double, double. Some kind of a sandwich or something?
No, it is how we order our coffee at Timmy's. Double double means coffee, two creams, two sugars.
Wow. Okay.
All right.
So that's like Vente at Starbucks or something.
No, that's large, isn't it? Isn't Vente large?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, it's.
They get angry when I go to Starbucks.
If you go to any Tim Hortons and you say a double double, they know what you're talking about.
They know exactly what you're talking about. Yep. All right. Chester, you'd say large double double, small double double. They just know to put two creams and two sugars in that mud. All right. Chesterfield.
Well, I was going to say cigarette.
Which has been the common
the
answer.
The most popular answer today.
In the U.S., but not in Canada.
But I didn't say it. I
just, okay, all right.
And so far, only one person has gotten this one right.
Yes.
Out of like 12
I have no
these
idea. I'm
got.
Just guessing all of these, pretty much.
Chesterfield.
He put a lot of thought into this. He really wants to take down Aaron Gamero.
Is it a car?
No. It's a couch or a sofa. Yep. All right. 40-pounder.
40-pound?
40-pounder.
Pounder.
40-pounder.
40-pounder.
My first thought was fish. A fish.
Second fishing answer.
But that would be a big fish, huh?
That would be a big, well, it depends. It would be 40-pound salmon in Lake Ontario. Yeah. But no.
40-pounder. It's like a small person.
Nope, it is a big bottle of booze at the liquor store.
The opposite of a Mickey?
Right,
yes. It's, yeah.
Okay.
All right, and finally, 2-4.
2-4.
2-4.
Is that like buy one, get one free at a store?
Nope. It's a case of beer.
Oh, 24.
24 bottles. Damn. In fact, we even have a holiday weekend called the 2-4 weekend. Traditionally known, we go camping with a case of beer and consume that case of beer in the woods. The 2-4 weekend.
Is that weekend anything special otherwise, it's, or is it just the 2-4 weekend?
Queen Victoria's birthday.
Oh, I was going with May.
It used to be Victoria Day.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And
it still is often, officially called it's Victoria officially Day, but everybody calls it the May 2-4 weekend.
Often
it's going to drink a 2-4.
It's the third Monday in May, and often that's the 24th. So it got the nickname May 2-4. And, yeah.
Do you have Friday or Monday off or something?
Yeah, we have the Monday off. Yeah. All right. So
there, how do you fare? Three, eh? Or
what's that?
What do you get, three?
Two and a half.
Two and a half.
Oh, 2.5. Oh.
Yeah.
I'll be back.